titled a top secret security clearance with all kinds of caveats there. And then he volunteered to go to Afghanistan, where at 23 years old, he was leading a team in combat in Kandahar. So, I mean, there's a long history of military service in our immediate family.
As a retired U.S. Army intelligence officer, what concerns you most about the Trump administration?
I'm afraid that's a long list. My immediate concern is as related to your earlier story. Both my son and I were in the National Guard. The first thing they start teaching you about in the National Guard is posse comitatus, and that it is illegal to use military force against U.S. persons on U.S. soil. This is reinforced by the Dick Act of 1903, and the abuse of the military.
We have 30 seconds.
On domestic issues is what I fear most, because that is indeed to quash our own freedoms and our First Amendment rights.
I want to thank you both for being with us. Bajan Ray Mavawala, retired U.S. Army intelligence officer, the father of Beji Mavawala, charged with conspiracy for protesting ICE. Aaron Glantz, we're going to link to your piece in The Guardian, the piece that you wrote, and as well as your books, The War.
I'm Molly, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO's loud and proud. Become a member during our KBOO Out Loud Fall Membership Drive, taking place now through September 20th. Your contribution goes towards grassroots, independent, radically made community radio. Donate now by going to kboo.fm/give. That's kboo.fm/give and help us reach our $45,000 goal. Thank you.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this Fall Membership Drive special edition of the KBOO Evening News, Oregon, Washington, and California are forming a healthcare alliance to guide vaccine use and protect access.
Survivors of a deadly shooting in Maine sue the United States government.
And in international news, the Russian president meets with the North Korean supreme leader in China.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, September 3rd, 2025. KBOO is currently in our fall membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Terrence Burns.
And I'm Josh Salem. Oregon, Washington, and California have formed a healthcare alliance to protect vaccine access. The news comes after significant shakeups at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention related to vaccines. The partnership, called the Western Health Alliance, will develop its own immunization guidelines. They will be, quote, informed by respected national medical organizations, end quote, according to the governors of the three involved states. Their joint statement added, quote, the CDC has become a political tool that increasingly peddles ideology instead of science, ideology that will lead to severe health consequences. California, Oregon, and Washington will not allow the people of our states to be put at risk, end quote. Last week, the White House fired CDC Director Susan Monterez, who was actually appointed by Donald Trump. Monterez refused to approve vaccine policies put forward by Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who has no medical training or experience. Kennedy has also been a longtime anti-vaccine activist. Several other CDC career scientists resigned in protest recently. Earlier this week, 9 former directors of the CDC condemned Kennedy's leadership of the agency in an op-ed in the New York Times. The Oregon Health Authority said, quote, "Vaccines are among the most powerful tools in modern medicine. They have indisputably saved millions of lives. But when guidance about their use becomes inconsistent or politicized, it undermines public trust at precisely the moment we need it the most," end quote. This is not the first time West Coast states have partnered on public health endeavors. In 2020, the three formed the Western States Pact to review federal vaccine recommendations and coordinate pandemic restrictions. And Oregon, Washington, and California were three of the final states to lift mask mandates. The states have also responded to other national healthcare policy changes. As anti-abortion medication and legislation moved to the courts, the states all developed their own stockpiles of the drugs, mifepristone and misoprostol.
Portland has just launched a national search for its first long-term city administrator. The role oversees an $8.6 million budget and more than 6,800 public employees across public safety, works and community, and economic development, and city operations. The person in that position, with the role temporarily being filled by City Administrator Michael Jordan, also works closely with the mayor and regularly attends City Council. At City Council meetings earlier this year, members vote to maintain their contact with Administrator Jordan and allow him to finish out the next year. They overwhelmingly agreed that Jordan's 7 years of experience as the city administrator was much needed and would be useful in advising the newly formed 12-person city council in its early stages. They also agreed to make room for someone who aligns with their values, especially after a publicized darkroom scandal between city officials and Zenith Energy. Mayor Wilson said, quote, "Our city administrator will set the tone for Portland. They will inspire and guide city staff, deliver high-quality services that Portlanders can trust, and help us solve our biggest challenges," end quote. The city administrator will make between $280,000 and $390,000 a year. The application is open through September 25th.
Trump wants troops in Chicago despite a federal court ruling. The Google breakup. And the House authorizes release of Epstein documents. With those stories and more, it's Zimon Perez with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
If the governor of Illinois would call me up, I would love to do it. Now, we're going to do it anyway. We have the right to do it because I have an obligation to protect this country.
President Donald Trump is confirming that he's sending the National Guard to Chicago, but wouldn't say when. A U.S. district judge just ruled the administration, quote, willfully broke a bedrock law against federal troops conducting civilian law enforcement, adding the White House seems to want to create a national police force that answers to the president. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker slammed Trump's comments about sending the guard to Chicago. The two-term governor and potential 2028 Democratic presidential candidate says the president is obeying his own worst impulses.
As a governor who cares about the well-being of my people, I can't live in a fantasy land where I pretend Trump is not tearing this country apart for personal greed and power.
Like Washington, D.C., where Trump has assumed control of policing, Chicago's rates of violent crimes are already falling from pandemic-era highs. Overall, violent crime there is down by a fifth, and homicides have fallen by a third. Google will not be broken up, but will have to share some data, including search results, with rivals. The judge in the tech giant's antitrust case has ruled against the DOJ bid to have the company spin off the Chrome browser and some Android products. The GOP-controlled House has released a group of documents about the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. The move is unlikely to stop a bipartisan effort to force the release of many more files, and sponsors of that effort are planning a high-profile Capitol Hill press conference with Epstein victims. The White House says the headquarters of the U.S. Space Force will be moved from Colorado to Alabama. Trump cites Colorado's policy of sending a mail-in ballot to every registered voter as a factor. Pennsylvania unions want the legislature to raise the state minimum wage to $15 an hour. It's now the federal minimum, $7.25, and hasn't gone up in a decade and a half. Sam Williamson with SEIU calls that embarrassing.
Every single state surrounding Pennsylvania has a higher minimum wage than Pennsylvania's. We're not concerned that raising the minimum wage is going to negatively impact businesses. In fact, when working people have more money in their pockets, they spend it where they live. They spend it in those same small businesses.
Migrant advocates say the presence of ICE is having a chilling effect in New York City. Mickey Jimenez with Capital District Latinos says even some parents with legal status aren't sending their kids to school. And she says many have a hard time getting legal help.
The biggest challenge is not having enough immigration attorneys when folks do get arrested. Even the pro bono legal services are at their max. They just don't have the resources to deal with the number of calls that they're getting for representation.
The Pentagon has authorized sending 600 military lawyers to the Justice Department to serve as temporary immigration judges. The decision means military attorneys, both civilian and uniformed, will help tackle the more than 3.5 million case backlog. I'm Zabim Perez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
Congress needs to act soon to keep Social Security healthy. With more on that story, it's Eric Galatas.
This year marks the 90th anniversary of Social Security, which has helped generations of Wyomingites retire with dignity after a lifetime of hard work. The program created during the Great Depression provides retirement, disability, and survivor benefits to more than 69 million Americans. AARP Wyoming Associate State Director Tom Laycock says Social Security lifts 30,000 Wyoming seniors out of poverty every year. Nearly one in five people in the state rely on the program for 90% of their income.
Social Security has never missed a payment in the last 90 years. The concern is we know if Congress fails to act by 2034, millions of Americans will see their earned benefits cut by about 20%. And we are asking Congress to look into ways to keep Social Security strong.
Social Security trustees project that Congress will need to make adjustments, as it has done in the past, within the next decade to maintain current benefit levels. Removing a tax cap on top earners would be one way to ensure the program's solvency. Currently, workers only contribute payroll taxes on the first $176,000 earned in a year. President Donald Trump has promised to protect Social Security and uproot waste, fraud, and abuse across the federal government. But Laycock says the administration caused confusion when it announced that beneficiaries would need to meet in person to verify their identity. After pushback from advocates, the administration backed off those requirements.
Requiring people to do in-person visits for perhaps some identification verification, that's kind of a problem in Wyoming. We have a large population that lives more than a 2.5-hour drive away from a Social Security office.
Social Security, an earned benefit often referred to as an entitlement program, injects nearly $3 billion into Wyoming's economy every year. Laycock explains that each time workers receive a check, payroll taxes are deposited into Social Security trust funds.
Social Security is actually fully funded by dedicated revenue. So first of all, it doesn't add any cost to the federal deficit, but it's also what keeps it fairly solvent.
This is Eric Galatas reporting for the Wyoming News Service.
Medical equipment scams hurt patients and Medicare itself. Suzanne Potter has more on the story from California.
Scams involving false claims for medical equipment are spreading across California, according to experts in Medicare fraud. Sometimes scammers offer free equipment in exchange for your Medicare number, even if you don't need it. They bill Medicare and potentially get paid. Carolina Ayler with the Kern County Aging and Adult Services Department says this not only drains money from the Medicare program, people can be denied the equipment in the future.
When they actually need the device and the doctor orders it, the supplier is going to try to bill Medicare. Medicare is going to deny the claim because there's already a claim for the same thing that was billed.
Sometimes the scammer will call or send a postcard or flyer offering incentives such as free cleaning, cooking, protein milkshakes, medical equipment, or transportation, anything to get people to give up their Medicare number. Some even set up storefronts and pay doctors kickbacks to fabricate orders for medical equipment. Ayler says some people have received multiple boxes of braces they never requested out of the blue.
You should send the box back. Contact your doctor to ask them if they prescribe the items. And then you should contact Medicare to make sure that claims were not submitted for items that were not ordered by your doctor.
Medicare can then flag the claim for fraud and remove it from your record. Help for this sort of issue is available via the Senior Medicare Patrol on the website of the nonprofit California Health Advocates, or you can call 1-800-MEDICARE. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
You are listening to a fall membership drive of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $45,000 by September 20th. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth interview with Jeremiah Hayden from Street Roots about his latest article for the paper on the violence faced by homeless residents. Then it's news from the Boo, your look at the news inside KBOO. At 6, it's Flashpoints. Then at 7, it's Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be cloudy, with clearing overnight, the low will be 62. Tomorrow will be partly cloudy with a high of 89. Today, in history, in 1189, Richard the Lionheart was crowned King of England. The quote of the day is from King Richard, who said, more than 800 years ago, quote, "My actions are so pure and honorable that I voluntarily and cheerfully render an account of them to the whole world."
Russian President Vladimir Putin and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un met in Beijing today in a political victory for North Korea. The two leaders met formally after attending a major military parade in the Chinese capital, which marked the 80th anniversary of the end of World War II. They traveled from a formal reception to the negotiations in the same car, and after a meeting between Russian and North Korean delegations, the two leaders held a one-on-one conference. Speaking to journalists, Putin praised the bravery and heroism of North Korean soldiers who fought alongside Russian troops to repel a Ukrainian incursion into the Kursk border region. North Korea sent around 15,000 troops to Russia since last year. It has also sent large quantities of military equipment to help with Putin's invasion. Kim said the cooperation between North Korea and Russia has, quote, significantly strengthened since the two countries signed a strategic partnership pact in June last year. Kim did not specifically mention the war, but said, quote, "If there's anything I can do for you and the people of Russia, if there is more that needs to be done, I will consider it as a fraternal duty, an obligation that we surely need to bear, and will be prepared to do everything possible to help," end quote. This marks the first time that Kim has attended a major multilateral event during his 14-year rule, and the first time Kim, Putin, and Chinese leader Xi Jinping have gathered at the same venue. Donald Trump referenced the Chinese leader on social media, writing, quote, "Please give my warmest regards to Vladimir Putin and Kim Jong-un as you conspire against the United States of America," end quote. A Putin advisor later commented on the post, saying, "There is no conspiracy."
Survivors of Maine's deadliest mass shooting and relatives of its victims are suing the federal government. They allege the U.S. Army could have stopped one of its reservists from carrying out the attack. In fact, they called it, quote, "one of the most preventable mass tragedies in American history." Robert Card killed 18 people in October of 2023 when he opened fire at a bowling alley. An independent commission later concluded that there were numerous opportunities for intervention from both Army officials and civilian law enforcement. Card was found dead by suicide 2 days after the shootings. The lawsuit was filed in federal court on behalf of more than 100 survivors and victims' family members. It says, conduct of the U.S. government, quote, directly and proximately caused the mass shooting. The suit added, Army officials, quote, failed to act reasonably, broke the promises they made to Card's family and their community, violated mandatory policies, procedures, and disregarded directives and orders, end quote. The claim alleges the United States knew as far back as March of 2023 that Card was paranoid, delusional, and violent, and that he lacked impulse control. It says the Army knew he had access to firearms and promised to remove his guns without actually doing so. Finally, it alleges the Army withheld information and actively missiled local law enforcement, preventing others from intervening. According to the suit, Card had been hospitalized and that he produced a hit list of those he wanted to attack. In September, a fellow reservist texted, quote, "I believe he's going to snap and do a mass shooting," end quote. Army officials conducted their own investigation after shootings and found, quote, "a series of failures by unit leadership." Three Army Reserve leaders were disciplined for dereliction of duty. The shootings led to new gun laws in Maine, which has a long tradition of hunting and gun ownership, including a state-imposed three-day waiting period. Spokesperson for the Department of Defense and the Army said they would not comment on pending litigation.
The U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals sides with the federal government in a case against the state of Alaska. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
News, I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The case had the potential to overturn decades of hard-fought legal battles to protect traditional fishing rights in rural Alaska. But in the end, the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals sided with the federal government in its lawsuit against the state to protect those rights. As KMBA's Rhonda McBride tells us, the win is a major victory for tribes.
This summer, for the first time in a long time, smokehouses along the Kuskokwim River were filled with bright red salmon.
We have no other choice but to prepare for hard winters, and it has been very difficult for us to meet our annual subsistence needs for the last 10 years.
Mike Williams serves on the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission, which joined the federal lawsuit against the state.
As a fisherman in these hard times, I was very pleased on the Ninth Circuit decision.
The federal appeals court affirmed ANILCA, the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act, a law Congress passed in 1980 that gives rural residents who are mostly Alaska Native top priority to harvest the salmon. The court says the state broke that law in 2021 when it ignored restrictions that federal managers imposed to save a struggling salmon run, as well as subsistence protections an Athabascan elder named Katie John had won in numerous court battles. The crux of the problem remains the state's constitution, which doesn't allow for a rural priority. Alaska's Attorney General Treg Taylor says he's disappointed in the decision, but not surprised. In a statement, he said the case would need to be decided at the highest level, yet stopped short of saying whether the state plans to appeal this case to the U.S. Supreme Court. And that has Joe Nelson, co-chair of the Alaska Federation of Natives, worried there could be more litigation ahead.
This is going to be just another chapter in the story that's going to continue.
Although this case involved one river, Nelson says there is so much at stake for all Alaska Natives. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
A youth curfew aimed at reducing violent crime in the Gila River Indian community in Arizona has been in place since late February. As KJZZ's Gabriel Piatrazio reports, the curfew will now be in effect through the end of the year.
It marks the fourth time the curfew has been extended. In this latest executive order, Governor Stephen Rowe Lewis wrote that the tribes south of Phoenix saw a decline in crime between June and August, but concerns over threats to public safety still remain, with Lewis adding that emergency action gives us stronger, more flexible tools to prevent violence and disorder before it starts. Leaders are even considering banishment as a solution. The tribe is surveying its membership about a draft ordinance to banish its own members who are convicted of committing violent crimes on the nearly 600-square-mile reservation. For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Piatrazio.
The Spirit Lake Nation, the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa Indians, and Native voters are formally asking the U.S. Supreme Court to review their case involving Native voting rights in North Dakota in the court's upcoming term. They filed a petition Tuesday. According to attorneys, the plaintiffs have been fighting for fair representation for Native voters since 2022. Public statements and expert testimony in the Line 5 reroute begin Wednesday in Madison, Wisconsin, and Bridge Energy plans to build a new 41-mile segment of its pipeline. Tribal and environmental groups are among those in opposition raising environmental concerns, while supporters are pointing to jobs and an economic boost. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
A food as medicine model is being advanced in the Midwest. Judith Ruiz Branch tells us more.
An Illinois nonprofit is working to connect farmers to healthcare systems as part of an effort to advance a food as medicine model for healthcare. Think Regeneration in Kelowna is helping more than 100 farmers in the organization build relationships with healthcare institutions, including hospitals and clinics. Ryan Slaybaugh with Think Generation says the farmers work with doctors to prevent chronic disease and support patients through nutrition-based interventions.
We can take some of that money and put it back into the local communities of farming and food. We see the ripple effects happen economically, as well as the positive health outcomes, which are obviously the big priority.
The organization's work is based on emerging science showing connections between soil health, plant nutrition, and human health. Slaybaugh says improved diet and nutrition has been shown to significantly improve health conditions like type 2 diabetes. Think Regeneration supports farmers and ranchers who avoid pesticides, herbicides, and minimize synthetic fertilizers. Slaybaugh notes while indigenous communities have understood food's medicinal purposes for thousands of years, modern medicine is only recently rediscovering these connections after decades of prioritizing efficiency over health.
I think doctors are now starting to understand that their patients are asking them, like, well, what should I be eating? And this comes from doctors that we work with. They are totally unprepared for that question.
Slaybaugh says doctors receive minimal nutrition education with much more time dedicated to pharmacology, creating an imbalance in how they approach healthcare. He says the initiative to promote food's medicinal uses requires partnerships across many sectors, including transportation, food storage, education, philanthropy, and scientific research.
A lot of these ecosystems have been siloed and working on their own problems, and I think this is a real attempt to kind of break down those silos and bring people back into the idea that we're all kind of participating in health, whether we're directly in healthcare or not.
For Illinois News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch.
When communities provide water and air conditioning, lives are saved. Dr. Anthony Leisowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and this is Climate Connections. During heat waves, people experiencing homelessness are in great danger. Without shelter, they're more likely to die from heat-related illnesses than the general public.
If it's extremely hot outside, they're out in the heat, they don't have access to shelter, a lot of them don't have access to air conditioning.
Evan Shannon is a physician with the UCLA Homeless Healthcare Collaborative, which provides mobile medical care to unhoused Angelenos. He says many people who are unhoused also have untreated health conditions like heart disease or substance use disorders that can make them more vulnerable to heat-related illnesses. And he says sometimes it's tough for the mobile clinic staff to quickly tell if patients' symptoms are caused by heat-related illness or another issue.
I saw a patient who it seems like, based on talking to some of his friends, was using fentanyl. And it was also one of those days where it was 100 degrees outside, and it was really hard to distinguish between if this patient was overdosing on fentanyl or was just passed out because of how hot it was.
So providing care may also become more complicated as the region experiences more hot days. And it's increasingly urgent for communities to provide water and air conditioning to people without shelter.
This is really a population that just has the greatest need.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to a fall membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Hannah Francis, the producer is Josh Salem, and our engineer is Ray Bodewell. Special thanks to Eric Galatas, Simone Perez, Suzanne Potter, Antonia Gonzalez, Judith Ruiz Branch, and Dr. Anthony Leisowitz. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Terrence Burns.
And I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. KBOO is currently in our fall fundraising drive, and our goal is to raise $45,000 by September 20th. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth. We're speaking with Street Roots reporter Jeremiah Hayden about his latest article.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Hannah Francis. I have here with me Street Roots reporter Jeremiah Hayden, here to talk about his latest article. Downtown Portland stabbing continues pattern of anti-homeless violence. Police arrests a housed man accused of stabbing two homeless neighbors. Oregon sees the highest level of violent attacks on homeless people in the U.S., according to a 2024 report by the National Coalition for the Homeless. Hi, Jeremiah. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Hannah. Thanks for having me.
So Victor Palmer Reagan has been accused by two witnesses of pepper spraying and then stabbing two unhoused people in Northwest Portland. What are the witness accounts of what happened?
This incident, happened last Wednesday, just a week ago. Witnesses, some of whom work for Rapid Response BioClean, which assists the city in homeless encampment sweeps, were